Hello. Welcome to our verse-by-verse in-depth Bible study with Bible teacher Dr. Bob Utley. Now, here is Bob.
Thinking a lot lately about heaven. And I would like to try to take you on a tour if I could. What is the best thing about heaven? I want to deal with that question around two other questions. The first one is, what is the primary reason for the existence of heaven? And second, why does the Bible speak so little about heaven? And I want to answer the second question first. Revelation 21 is almost exclusively the only picture of heaven we have. We have glimpses in Psalms 23 about being with the Lord in His house forever. We have pictures from John 14 about there are many dwelling places there and that God has our name on one if we've trusted Him by faith. But there's so little about it. Why is that, do you think? I think one reason is that there is no human analogy possible to talk about heaven. All those stones you read, they choked me as bad as they choked you. I don't know what all the stones are. Gold, diamonds, rubies, emeralds, pearls, a gate as big as a pearl. That'd kill an oyster. You know that, don't you? You got a pearl that big, you got an oyster real big. Why streets of gold and seas of glass and why? 1 Corinthians 2:9 says, eye has not seen, ear has not heard, nor entered into the heart of man the things that God has prepared for those who love Him. There's not human vocabulary to talk about heaven. Man, we can have gold as pure as glass, and I'll tell you right there, it's a metaphor. You ever seen clear gold? We're just trying as best we can with the limitations of human finite language to capture something that's so far beyond the ability of sinful finite man to comprehend that the Bible just can't really talk about what it's going to be like when we see Him face to face. 1 John 3:2. That's why I think the Bible talks so little about it. It's mentioned often here and there with different metaphors, but very little is said about heaven itself. With that in mind, I would like to do the best job I can on what is said about the place we know as heaven. What makes heaven so significant? Why is there going to be a state and a place that we call heaven? Well, because I am very concerned to let the Bible speak to me instead of me speaking to the Bible, it's very important that I look at the words that the Bible uses to describe as best it can what is indescribable. And there are two primary words. The first one is the Hebrew term for heaven. It's called Shemayim. It's plural, Shemayim. The rabbi said because it's plural, there's either seven of them or three of them. You might remember in Paul in the Corinthian correspondence said, I was caught up to the third heaven, the place where God lived. In Greek, the word sounds a little different. It's the word Ouranos. Hebrew means the heights. Greek means that which is lifted up. And the Bible uses these in strange ways. Two ways that have nothing to do with the concept of what we know as heaven. The first thing, if you remember reading the book of Genesis, it talked about God made the heavens and the earth. Well, that's not talking about what we've been talking about, the place where God dwells, where eternity and joy. It's not talking about that. It's just talking about the atmosphere that surrounds the earth, the place where the birds fly, the clouds move through. That's what it's talking about. We know it as the atmosphere. And that's one way the Old Testament term uses the word heaven. The second way is equally inappropriate to what we're talking about, and that's where it mentions all that region beyond the atmosphere. That region that we would call the cosmos or the universe. That region where God spangled the stars. That region where the sun and the moon hold sway. That region where planets move across the night sky. That's called the heavens. But that's not what I'm talking about. Finally, there is that use of the term heaven that speaks of that which is even beyond the physical, that which is beyond Alpha Centauri, that which is beyond all the other galaxies that we know exist, that which is the special abode and home of the presence of the Creator, Redeemer, God. And that's really what I'm talking about. But I want you to know that out of all the number of times the word heaven is used in Greek and Hebrew, most of the time it's talking about the atmosphere or the stars. Why is that? Well, I think we need to focus on the fact that earth, biblically speaking, is the center of God's creation. Now, we know it's not the center as far as the way things spin and turn and move, but as far as the heart of God, if the Bible is right, earth is the center theologically of God's creation. And so it becomes real important as we look at how the New Testament uses this term and how it relates to us as individuals. I want to deal first in a theological sense about heaven. I want to speak as a theologian before I speak as a man. I want you to think clearly of what I'm trying to say to you. Number one, heaven is a glimpse of that which is sinless as everything once was. Heaven is a corner of God's creation that has not been polluted and permeated by the sin of the angels and the sin of man. Heaven is a little foretaste or a little glimpse of what everything once was. And it's a little foreshadow and a little glimpse of what everything will be. What do you think Jesus meant in the Sermon on the Mount when he taught us how to pray? And in that Matthew 6 passage, he says, talks about God's name and how hallowed it is. And then he said a little phrase, "And thy will be done on earth as it is in heaven." Well, Jesus is saying nothing less than that God's universal reign, the sinlessness that now is capsuled in heaven, will one day capsule all of creation. He's praying for the fullness of the reign of God as it is in one little corner of the creation, that one day it'll be manifested in all the creation as it once was. Second, evil, first of all in the angelic order, and second of all in the rebellion of man, has marred God's creation. Now, I want you to know, I think God knew about it. And I want you to realize the price that God paid for you to have personal freedom to respond to Him by faith. Can you imagine if you created something, whether it be a painting or maybe you're just like to build things, or build a building, or whatever you'd like to do, but you did the best job at something you could. Could you imagine taking a knife and cutting up your best original painting? Could you imagine dynamiting, if you were an architect, your best building design? Can you imagine that? It's exactly what God allowed to happen. He allowed that which is perfect to become imperfect, that man might trust Him because man wanted to. I want to tell you, the world we live in is a world that's marred. This is not the world that God intended it to be. Sickness, pain, deformity, disease, disruption, sin. This is not the world that God intended it to be. And it's not the world that it will one day be. Third, God is moving through time and eternity to restore all things through Christ. If you want a good verse, I hope you'll look up Colossians 1, 19 and 20. There is the greatest picture of the work of Jesus Christ that not only covers the sin of man on terra firma, but the death of Jesus Christ covers the entire pollution of the cosmos. Jesus not only set man's heart potentially right, but Jesus set the entire universe back in a state that was pleasing to God. He restored all things in heaven and on earth, if you please. Colossians 1, 19 and 20, one of the most marvelous Christological passages anywhere in the Bible, the book of Colossians. And finally, theologically speaking, heaven is that name by which we know the process that God is involved in when He is going to restore all things to the way they once were. Heaven is not something new. Heaven is the remaking of something that's old. Heaven is not something man has not experienced before. Heaven is the re-experience of what Adam has known briefly. Let me give you a few verses about God going to make all things new. He's not going to destroy and recreate necessarily, but He is going to recreate that which already is. Isaiah 65:17, Isaiah 66:22, very famous passage in 2 Peter 3:13, and of course what we just read in Revelation 21. That theologically I think is what heaven's for. Now let me mention something that I think is going to surprise you, and you probably haven't heard it before unless you've been a member of this church for a while, but I want you to think about what I'm saying. People in their modern way of looking at the world try to critique heaven because they say it's a place. And it can't be a place because we've been in outer space and God's not there, so the whole concept of heaven is just ridiculous. Where is heaven? Where is it? Is it beyond the farthest star? Is it beyond the farthest galaxy? Where is heaven? Is it a place? If it is a place, where is it? Well, I'm not sure that I know can answer all those questions biblically, but I can answer part of that. Heaven is where God is. Think what I'm saying. Heaven is where God is. So really, when Jesus said the kingdom of God is with you, it's in your mouth and in your heart, heaven is here to some extent. And heaven is also there. Wherever there is wherever God is. And as God is here, God is also there. And so heaven really is not centralized in a locality right now. It's permeating everything God has done until the time that it's going to be localized again. Now, what do I mean by that? Most of my adult life, when I have recognized the content of sermons, I have been continually hearing that we are going to heaven. We are going to heaven someday. And I think that is absolutely untrue. We go to be with God at death, but we do not go to heaven. Heaven is coming to us. A recreated earth is what heaven is going to be. The whole chapter of Revelation 21 is not us going to New Jerusalem, which is a biblical metaphor for heaven, but it's heaven coming to us. Have you ever read Isaiah 11? Little children are going to play with the snakes, and the bear and the lion and the ox are going to be together. That's heaven. It's a restored, recreated universe with nature and man and God in one locality. Have you ever thought about the way the Bible begins in Genesis 1, 2, and 3 when God begins to create and He makes a garden east of Eden? And in that garden, He caused all things beautiful to dwell. And then He caused man to dwell there. And so the Bible begins with God and man in a garden, with the animals. And if you read Revelation 22, the way it's going to end is God and man in a garden. And the river of life is going to flow from the throne. Be 12 wonderful trees, not one but 12, which grow the fruit all year long. And God and man and the animals are back together again, the way they were originally intended to be. Friends, we're not going to heaven. We may go to be with God when we die. But when that great day comes of Jesus coming, heaven is coming to us. And God's going to recreate that which was fallen, and the dwelling place with God will again be among man. Did you hear that first emphasis of Revelation 21? Heaven is coming to us. Remember in John 14, 2, where that beautiful passage says, "You believe in God, believe also in me. In my Father's house are many mansions. If it were not so, I would have told you. And I'm going to prepare a place for you. And if I'm going to prepare a place for you, I'm coming again to receive you unto myself, that where I am, there you may be also." Isn't that exactly what New Jerusalem is? And it's not that we're going there. Friends, the hotel's coming to us. What is heaven's major purpose? I want to deal with the last question. The first question I ask you, I want to deal with now. Primarily, heaven is going to show two things about God. On one hand, it's going to show that God really is a God of long-suffering and patience and love and forgiveness and mercy. The first thing heaven's going to show beyond all else is the love of God. For who else will be the citizens of this perfect place than imperfect people made perfect again through Jesus Christ? Grace is the great shining truth that sinners as children of God eternally with Him is going to show. Secondly, heaven is going to show the justice of God. I don't know if you've been really hurt by this world yet. If you're older, you've been really hurt by this world. Maybe it's the deformity of a child that dies early. Maybe it's cancer. Maybe it's MS that takes a young parent. Maybe it's just the evil of men and the hatred that is sometimes expressed. Maybe it's the horror of war, seeing men die by the hundreds. Maybe it's famine, watching children starve. This is an evil world. This is a godless world. This is an unfair world. And if there is no heaven, there is no justice in God. Because things have not been made fair here. There is not ultimate justice here. The good do die young here. The evil do succeed most of the time here. If there is not an afterlife where God judges those who have rejected Him and rewards those who have loved Him, God is unfair. Heaven primarily is to magnify the grace of God and the justice of God. Secondly, heaven for the most part is going to unify God's creation. Right now, God has somewhat excluded himself to that small realm we know as heaven. But he's not going to stay there, folks. He's just staying there to give us a little while to respond to his Son by faith. Thirdly, heaven confirms the eternality of man. I don't believe that you always existed in the past. I don't believe you have been alive from eternity past. But if the Bible's true, the moment that your father's sperm and your mother's egg joined, you are an eternal being from that point on. There may be a time when you were not, but there'll never be a time that you won't be. Heaven is that part of theology that affirms the eternality of man. But I still have not got to what I really want to say about heaven. I've just tried to lay a theological foundation for what I really want to say that touched me personally so much this week. I was watching the CBS Nightly News Wednesday night. And they were speaking about a marine company in China during the war that adopted a little Chinese boy. They called him Charlie Two Shoes. Some of you may have seen that report. And they let this little Chinese boy live with them in their barracks. And they fed him, and they were concerned enough about his education, they took up money and had the boy educated. But they had to leave. They left the boy there. And what CBS showed was the reunion of that 49-year-old man, Charlie Two Shoes, with that marine company in an airport in the north. And you know, I caught myself beginning to cry over that. And I thought, you emotional thing, you Utley, what are you doing crying over this? Yeah. And I begin to try to think, why did this touch you so deeply? What was in this that really said something to you? And you know what it was? I wasn't crying because of Charlie Two Shoes and the Marine Company. I was crying over the joy that I knew I was going to experience in the reunion that's coming in my life when I finally get home. You see, that is the greatest thing about heaven. It's not streets of gold or gates of pearls. And the greatest thing about heaven is not that I'm going to live forever. And even the greatest thing about heaven, as good as it's going to be, is not seeing my folks and my loved ones and my friends again. But the greatest thing about heaven is that I'm going to see and know God in a way that I have always longed to know Him. For as Augustine says, there is a God-shaped hole in every one of our lives, and until we find Him, we are never really satisfied. Isn't the beauty of the parable of the prodigal son something of that reunion between that father and that son who's been so far away? Isn't the beauty of that great feast that one day is going to be spread for Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and all the children of the kingdom who had trusted Christ by faith, and that great time of reunion symbolized, if I can put it colloquially, in a West Texas barbecue, is something there of the joy of going to be with God? Maybe it's John 14:3 about where I am, there you may be also. Maybe it's something of 1 Corinthians 13:12 about we see through a glass darkly, but one day we're going to see Him face to face. Or maybe ultimately it's 1 John 3:2 that says we do not yet know what we will be like, but we know we will be like Him when we see Him. Reunion. Greatest thing about heaven is reunion. Many times we think that the first person we're going to want to see is mother, dad, or husband or wife, or children. I know that's coming, and I know that's a part of it. But folks, those of you who've lost someone you love very, very much, I want you to magnify the longing you feel for that one. Magnify it by as much of a magnification as your mind can fathom, and then realize that that is how much happier you're going to be to see God. I really long to see God. I've put all my resources, all my energy, all my time, everything I am into Him. Heaven is primarily a homecoming. That's what Marvin was singing about. Coming home. Friends, if you don't know Jesus Christ, I'm going to invite you on the authority of the Creator, Redeemer, God of the universe to take the first step toward coming home this morning. I can't promise you heaven by and by, because that's in God's hands and He knows when and where and how. But I can promise you heaven in your heart today. I don't know how far you've wandered away from God, but I want you to know the love of God put its arms around you. And I want you to know I, on the authority of God, am calling you home. Won't you come home today? If you've never trusted Him by faith, won't you come home today? Christian, I know it gets hard. Some of you aren't looking for heaven a whole lot. The Bible is very poignant when it says, where your treasure is, there will your heart be. Where is your treasure, my friend? Where is your heart? Invest in the things of God, and homecoming will be the most significant thing in your life.